thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
It's a living. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Remember, on social media, WGN King John, that's how you find me. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals, the award-winning podcast. The gang just cut the latest edition, and they talked a lot about the mayoral race, election, and victory for Lori Lightfoot. That was a good conversation. The gang had some interesting things to say about what happened and what should or could happen next. And then we spent more time than we do lately in Trump land. We talked a little bit about what the president has been saying. We talked about the Mueller report. We talked about the president's taxes and some of the very weird things that have been coming out of the president's mouth and thumbs lately. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show today. In fact, one of the things that the president said, I think, affects a lot of us here in the Midwest, and that is wind farms. Brenda and I went to Indianapolis over the weekend to a friend's wedding. That is, one of my son's college roommates and teammates got married, and we were lucky enough to be invited to the wedding in Indianapolis, so we drove down and back. And you go up and down I-65, as we did many, many times when my son was at Butler, and you just can't help but be awe-inspired by those giant wind turbines. I looked online to see a little something about those. Some of them are twice the height of the Statue of Liberty. You know, when you get close to just a few of them near I-65 there, you just go, holy cow, what an engineering marvel that thing is. Now, I don't live near any of those, so it's very easy to appreciate the wonder of them as you're driving away from them. But the president said, well, let's just play his comments, because I think, you know, forget about whether or not you like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, and forget about whether or not the man's insane. We'll talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour. Right now, I just want to talk a little bit about wind farms.
Hillary wanted to put up wind. If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You tell me that one, okay? You know, the thing makes it so... And, of course, it's like a graveyard for birds. If you love birds, you'd never want to walk under a windmill, because it's a very sad, sad sight. It's like a cemetery.
So he's a stand-up comic. You know, I'm a little disappointed, because when I first heard that the president said that windmills cause cancer, I thought, oh, no, he really means that. He doesn't mean that. He's riffing. They're laughing. It's a bunch of Republicans, and they think the stuff he says is funny, and he thinks it's funny. And I don't know how much of it he believes, but you cannot tell based on that. He's just cracking wise. That's all that is. Maybe he believes it. Maybe he doesn't. But you can't tell from that clip, because it's just a laugh fest. Now, should he be doing that? No. Does he do that? Yes. And the main takeaway shouldn't be if his behavior is appropriate or not. It should be, is he on to something or not? For instance, the news click at WGNradio.com asks you if you think there's something to what the president says. Now, he says it's not the turbine per se, but this is the theory, at least one of them, that spinning turbine creates a sort of frequency that you might not hear. Maybe you do, but that frequency, and I'm going to make a noise now, but that vibration, that sound, maybe you hear it, maybe you don't, can vibrate your body and your cells or your brain, and maybe it causes cancer. I don't know. People think cell towers do the same thing as well. So we're asking you if you think there's something to that. The New York Times vetted the president's speech afterwards, and they said there's no evidence to that fact. There's no evidence. So, you know, there's so little evidence, it shouldn't even be maybe something we talk about. But people aren't always entirely persuaded by what the scientific community says. The president, for instance, said that if you have a house near one of those wind farms or one of those turbines, the value of your home goes down. So I did a little clicking around about that. And one report that was exhaustive over several states and 50,000 homes over 15 years said there's no evidence that the value of those homes goes down. And I call BS on that. Are you kidding me? If somebody a mile away or if your neighbor put up one of those things, and it's kind of hard to know because we're talking rural areas mostly here, and I don't know that a farmhouse has the same sort of market fluctuations as houses do in Naperville or LaGrange or Chicago. But anyway, if you had your choice to live near one of those or not, I'm almost certain you would say no. They're fun to drive by. They're pretty cool to look at. They're really clean energy. Those are all wonderful things. It's just not in my backyard, please. So there's that, too. So I need to hear from people who live along I-88 or I-65. I don't know. Where are the wind farms around here? I mean, there's just a bunch of turbines in north central Indiana. And I know there are some in the far western exurbs of Chicago. I don't know if there are some. I haven't been to Peoria in so long. I don't know if there's any along I-55 that way or I-57. If you're going to Champaign, do you see them? You would think that central Illinois would be just as windy as north central Indiana. They say that's bad for birds, and I believe that too. More about bird health later on. Line one. All right. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Just call me. Tell me what your experience or thoughts are. We'll start with Brian. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I am a former wind farm developer, so wanted to comment on some of the things that you were mentioning earlier.
What's on your mind? Yeah,
one,
go ahead.
Well, the property values of folks who have wind turbines on their land don't decrease because they receive a monthly revenue stream from not only the energy that's created, but also there's an easement agreement that the wind farm owner has with that property owner. So it really helps a farmer, because that's where turbines are, to secure themselves financially against a bad crop year. And especially in the Midwest, where sometimes they have to replant soybeans two or three times because of late frost, that's a big assistance to the farming community.
Is there an instance where, though, I knew the farmer got a check, but what about the guy who doesn't get a check because it's not on his property, but it's within his sight line?
Sure. So the way that wind farms are developed, there's an apron that goes outside of the actual wind farm. So you might be part of the wind farm family, even if you don't have a turbine on it, because there might be lines running underneath your property, and you will get a monthly fee and rental for that. And then the apron outside of it, you will get a piece of the revenue. Not as great as if you had lines going above your land or underneath it, or if you had a turbine, but you will also participate in the revenue sharing and the annual payment plan that developer provides. And the other thing, too, is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Organization makes developers go through a minimum of 24 months of mitigation studies to determine what flight patterns that certain birds and bats both have in these areas. And if it's deemed that there will be any harm done to a large portion of those populations, the U.S. government doesn't allow them to build there.
You know, you make good sense, and obviously you know about it because you said you were a wind farm developer. I still wonder if the people in those towns think it's this rosy picture that you're describing it as.
Well, there certainly will be people who are, say, outside of that apron who would be NIMBYs, not in my backyarders, because they're just outside the footprint of the payment schedule. So there will be some sort of jealousy that would be natural because, you know, their neighbor across the road is getting paid for this, and they're not.
But, you know, if I lived, like, when I, my life in Chicago is I get to see the lake, I get to see the downtown, it's lovely. I don't own any of that, but it's very much a part of my experience, right?
Sure.
Well, very much a part of the experience of the people living out there now, if they're not within that apron, is they've still got to drive around and live around those things. I don't know how we compensate that. I don't know if that's a fair consideration, but that seems to be legitimate to me.
I would agree. I think the opinion in that instance, the opinion is subjective because some people think that they're majestic sites, and some people probably think that they sort of, you know, they make the landscape less desirable or more unpretty. But that's in the eye of the beholder. Just
well,
like
I'll bet
art
you.
Would be.
I've never seen a real estate ad saying located conveniently near my neighbor's wind farm. I don't see.
But we did, I would agree.
We don't compensate people. We didn't compensate people when we first put up telephone wires, though, right? And that.
What are those junk-up neighborhoods?
Well, I mean, it probably would have. I guess the difference is there was a more personal, immediate impact on it.
I guess. I'll tell you what. I'd love to see them bury telephone lines in my neighborhood because it's amazing how much they clutter the view. You kind of learn to look past. Hey, listen, one last thing. I got to go. But do those things emit a sound or frequency that you don't hear that might be injurious?
No, what they do, and you know, they measure it. And so when I would go out to meet with prospective landowners or stakeholders, we would take them underneath existing turbines, and we would take a meter reader with us. The sound that they emit is that of a whisper that you would hear from maybe 3 feet away. So they're not silent, but it's nothing that the human ear isn't accustomed to. 24/7
doesn't cause cancer.
So,
doesn't cause cancer.
It does not cause cancer. The only real thing is, and the industry is still studying this, is something called light flicker, where if you know the sun is there, you know those blades are going to block out the sun, you know when they rotate. But the industry as a whole has been studying this for the greater part of 10 years and spending tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on it. To see if that even affects, if it affects humans, or if it affects animal life. And there is no evidence to this point that it affects either.
It's nice of you to call, so you're not in the business anymore, huh?
No, I left about 6 years ago because the, you know, like every other source of energy in this country, we're dependent upon government support and, so the industry shrunk, but it's on its way back, so probably getting back into it pretty soon.
Good luck to you, Brian. I appreciate your listening and your call.
Thanks, John. Take care.
The solar panel industry for residents, for residential solar panels, has enjoyed government subsidies at the state, federal, local level. I've done commercials for the solar panel industry, and I know just this much about it. That's a really good idea. You can use your tax dollars in a lot of ways, and I think helping subsidize clean energy like that is good for everybody, except the guy who doesn't like it on his farm or the neighbor's farm. Jim, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling. What do you want to say?
Hey, with these wind turbines, I'm an electrician, and they're great and everything. The ones I really hate that are in the ocean, but it causes a strobing effect, like you said, which can cause seizures. I had it in my dentist's office. I told them about it. Next time I went there, it was, you know, changed, moved. But yeah, that's what it can cause. And if I remember right, 60 Minutes did something, and they had mentioned something about that, you know, with people being close to it.
Wait, so what it can if cause. I may, Jim, you were you experience the turning of the turbine, which blocks in and out the sunlight. It creates a strobing effect. Do you have the seizures right away or later in the day?
No, I didn't have them. I know from being an electrician, studies and this and that, that it can cause seizures, the strobing effect. I was on a job, and I was joking around one time, and I took my strobe light, and I start flashing it at this guy. And he's like, man, don't do that, you know. And I'm like, what? You know, oh, you can set me off.
Really?
And I can go into seizures. Yes,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So that's the big thing with those. They're really good idea. The worst ones are the ones that are underwater, so... But that's a whole new subject. But you're great, John. Love you as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Really helpful. Thanks for the call. I don't have time to get into the underwater thing, but we'll do that another day. Thank you, Jim. I'm going to go from you to a Jim who says he lives in the middle of one of these wind farms. Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, John. I've got about 150 towers that are directly around our property, and I can tell you there's the apron that the first caller talked about, everyone gets paid inside a certain, that's not true. We're not getting paid. The tax benefits that our property taxes went up, not down, as we were sold on these lowering taxes. Really, the only ones that benefit directly from them are, like the first caller said, the farmers who are slapping them on their properties. Everyone else around these or within sight of them will never sell their property. And it's unfortunate. Not to mention the second caller, the strobe effect. It's the first time that you see it, you kind of think you're being invaded by a UFO. It is very odd, difficult to get used to, and frequent. So the first caller was definitely selling all the benefits and a little light on the negative.
Where do you live? Are you in Illinois or Indiana?
We're in Kankakee County.
Okay, so they have them over there. I haven't been down that way in a while. And so 150 towers, none of them close enough to you that you get any money, huh?
Oh, they're literally on all the property surrounding ours. And no, there's no payments to any of the landowners or homeowners that have connecting properties.
I'm sorry to hear that, and I really appreciate you chiming in, too. We heard both sides here. Thanks for calling, Jim.
Yep, bye.
Yeah, have a good day. John, the Statue of Liberty is a bad example because people often remark how small they thought it was after they saw it when you compare one of those wind turbines to the Statue of Liberty. If you could stand a football field on its end and then do it again, you would have one of those turbines. John, talk about decreased property value. Some people in Texas are not happy about the president's stupid wall coming within feet of their property. 219 says they kill a lot of birds, and 815 says neighboring houses get a payment every year of around $2,500. Maybe they do in that neighborhood, but we just heard not everybody gets paid. John, years ago I told my kids that those were giant fans to keep the corn cool so it won't pop.
You know, can I just say one thing about killing the birds? Because the Tribune had a story today about bird kills. You know, they fly into buildings here and everything.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible thing.
It is.
I could look up the stat. I don't remember it offhand, but I looked it up a few years ago. The number of birds killed by cats,
yeah,
your pets,
yeah,
far exceeds the number of birds killed by windmills or birds put
well, then,
together.
I don't know how there are any birds left, because the Tribune story today said 1 billion, with a B, birds die every year flying into buildings. Think about that. How are there any birds left? And then if the cats are going after the rest of them, it's unbelievable.
USA Today headline, cats kill up to 3.7 billion birds a year.
Okay, and then a billion from trees, or from buildings, that's, what did you say, 3.7?
3.7 billion.
So that's 4.7 billion, give or take a few hundred million here. And then some of them just get digestive disorders and they can't fly anymore.
Right.
I'm not kidding. And so then the next thing you know, that's 5 billion birds that die every year. Just from that.
I mean, my point is that if we're going to choose between clean energy and cats running around, I think we should go after the cats.
Steve, we need to use our best voices. Give me your best broadcast voice, Steve.
That was it. I was talking to Bill in the lobby. I see him in the studio there. Yeah.
Bill Curtis is here, and John St. Augustine is, too. I know John. I think I'm meeting in person. Bill, the first time, maybe. Bill Curtis, nice to see you. How are you?
Good to see you, John.
And John St. Augustine, welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be back. The last time I saw you, we were...
In Minnesota?
No.
Where were we? What was the show we were at? We were at the Kane County Flea Market.
Kane County Flea Market.
Big time. You're going up there.
That's a great thing.
It's different.
It's
and good.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit. I hope they are able to keep what made that thing a really fun, unique place where people bought all sorts of antiques and hard to find novelties and stuff like that.
Like you, hard to find novelties like John. We bump
King
in.
County
like,
Flea Market.
I know this guy. We were having this conversation in the middle of the Kane County Fairgrounds, so it was great.
So that's the voice of John St. Augustine. He's a radio talk show host. He's an author. He has substitute hosted on this station many times.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Curtis is here, too, who needs very little introduction. What's first on your resume? When you say Bill Curtis, broadcast journalist and beef producer and wait, don't tell me.
He does quick IDs for WGN Radio.
We know the voice. So you two are getting together to do a sort of symposium Monday night at Northeastern Illinois University. NIEU, Foster and Pulaski.
Foster on the northwest side of the city, not too far from Roma's Beef on Cicero Avenue, which I kind of base everything around.
Right, the nearest good beef
joint.
That's
right, that's right. Sausage.
That's where you went to school, right?
I did go to school there. I graduated in 92. The first year I was there was in 1977. I went on a football scholarship. We were the NAIA champs. And my claim to fame is Dave Craig, who played 12 years in the NFL. I put him on his beep three times before the half was
nice.
Over. Yes.
Nice.
Other than that, no grade point average.
How about you, Mr. Curtis? I don't know. Where did you go to school?
Kansas University and law school in Washburn in Topeka. So I'm a Midwesterner. Came up in 1966.
Does that explain some of your interest in agriculture?
A little bit. I was not a farm boy. I was a townie. But I now own a ranch down there and very much into conservation here.
That's what you guys are talking about, too.
Yeah.
This is kind of a weird... So what is the title of this talk you guys are giving?
So the background of this, it started with a program that Bill and I did for 3 years. We did 300 episodes of a radio short called Earth Matters. And the idea actually came in 2009. I was at Harpo Radio doing a bunch of things, and Bill was in doing, I think, Gene Chachisco or Dr. Oz's show, somebody. And I had an idea for a short-form program. And so I had written these Earth Matters. I gave them to him. He read them. I forgot about them for 3 years. And the old production guy there says, what do you want me to do with these? And I said, what are you talking about? So the guy slapped production on them, put them on the air. They were great. We did 300 episodes. And this is kind of the evolution of that. And it's in person. And we're doing it on stage. Really, the concept is that it's climate change, but it's agriculture. It's the sharks taken out of the water, but it's the runoff of silts from too much salmon fishing, everything being connected. So this is a 90-minute multimedia program called the Earth Matters, the Science and Spirituality, Ethics in Action. Guess who handles the science out of the two of us? It would be Mr. Curtis. So it's kind of like a tag team environmental thing, but it's also consciousness awareness about what people can do right where they're at.
Well, what's the takeaway? What are people supposed to do as a result of this?
Just raise some consciousness. You know, I'm afraid for the climate change. This is the biggest story of our time. It's like the world has cancer and nobody pays any attention to it. We had an inter-panel UN report come out. And it was largely, even a headline, a sub-headline for one day. It was kind of submerged in the Trump headlines and politics in Washington. They've taken it over. So nobody is paying any attention to it. And yet, I started reading the reports, and that panel specifically says 643 million people will be without water in 5 years, not 15, not by the turn of the century, which I think probably has hurt us.
We'll be without water. Why?
Because it's running out and it is relocating. You know, we'll have lots of water come in on the hurricanes, but suddenly, within 5 years, and it's already started to go down, you have droughts in the Southwest, droughts in Texas.
California.
And one of the problems, and the additional wildfires, one of the problems is this roller coaster, so that it's not steady.
Do you guys think we're too late to the game?
I'm going to talk a lot about a new book called The Uninhabitable Earth.
I've read it.
And they start out with a great...
Do you think that he made too terrifying a case for his own good?
No, because I think you have to get attention.
The first sentence is, it's much, much worse than you think.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to use that. It is much worse.
Really?
And the numbers tell it all. And we're beginning to now see documentaries that go out to the Maldives and watch the water come up over a lot of the resorts. In Miami, there is a season down there where the streets of the main district are filled with water.
Oh, really?
And so we're having to adapt. In North Carolina, they say that the salt water is moving further and further into the agricultural fields, replacing fresh water with salt water and rendering them useless.
Don't you think, John, that the problem, though, is that there's this big disconnect? It's like if the temperature goes up 2 degrees, whatever. And by the way, it was cold today. So
right.
Even though I'm doing these things and you're telling me it's going to have these tragic consequences, I don't see it.
John, listen, here's the deal. So everything I need to know about what's going on with the planet, I learned in fifth grade at Belding Grammar School on Northwest Side. We live in a biosphere. Everything happens in the biosphere, stays in the biosphere. Do you remember the whole ozone thing in the 70s? The Montreal Protocol came out of that because they found that there was a hole in the ozone layer, which was caused by chlorofluorocarbons. Try and say that four times in a row.
Yeah.
CFCs, right? So once that was discovered, this massive action was taken place, and the Montreal Protocol was signed. All these nations got behind it, and those CFCs were banned. There was a pushback from manufacturers of CFCs, but they found other ways to come up with propellants. The ozone hole, because of that, is starting to close, and it'll go back after about 2029 to its pre-1988 design, what it was supposed to do. It is the sunscreen of the planet. You try and pull that off today, there's a hole somewhere. It'd be called fake news because you can't see it. So I just had this conversation last week. I'm going to drop a name, but Dr. Jane Goodall was in Chicago. And I had a conversation with her, and she said apathy is the biggest deterrent to people taking action because of it's too late. I don't buy that. I think you can do something right where you're at, where you are to do. And when there's an issue that bothers you, I think you got one of two things. You can deny it, or you could be apathetic about it, which then excludes you from having to be responsible for it. So for me, what I'll be doing is kind of hammering on that stuff. Do something somewhere. Do what you have. Use that.
Do you have a list of priorities?
No.
Do either of you?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Let me just jump on this. I was in the same auditorium in 1991 when I was going for my degree, and I had to do a talk on the environment. And I gave out 50 things people could do. And afterwards, a woman came up and said, I don't like any of those. Do you got anything else? So figure it out.
I have a priority.
What's yours?
Deep-rooted native plants in the prairie. These are 10 to 15 feet with their roots. They go down and they create this ecosystem subterranean with billions of organisms that all eat carbon. It is the number two carbon sink where you can sequester carbon from the atmosphere. And studies go that if we properly manage grasslands of the world and flowers, if you will, we could cut about 20% out of the carbon that is going up. That's going to take it off a lot. We have 83 million acres of corn planted, corn that we can't eat, but it has to go to livestock. Somehow that has to be returned to prairie and native. So we're going to have to create an incentive, money, subsidies, you know, things like that.
You know, I have to watch my words here because in that book that you just mentioned, The Uninhabitable Earth, which says that we put as much carbon into the atmosphere as we had before, and if the halfway point is Al Gore's, what did he call it, book or movie?
Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, Inconvenient Truth. So Al Gore comes out with Inconvenient Truth. We put as much carbon into the air since then as we had at that point in time. But in that book, he says, okay, here's some of the problems. You know, we drive big cars, we still burn coal. And he mentions beef, Bill. He mentions beef sometimes. Well, how does beef, and I know you are a producer, how does that lend to carbon pollution or greenhouse gases?
Well, they add up all the things that use up carbon. Tractors to and combines to harvest the corn. 150 pounds of ammonium nitrate chemicals to fertilize every acre for corn, plowing the earth every year for this annual plant, which releases carbon into the air. That corn has been specially graded and created for cattle. It goes into the feedlots. We have, in Texas, there's one that can handle 250,000 head a day, and we jam them in together. They reduce the nutrition of the cattle, and they are releasing their own methane into the air. So everybody looks at that, when in fact, we're eating an awful lot of beef and probably should reduce it. And you can reduce the amount of carbon right there, just like the emissions. But that alone, you know, isn't going to really handle it. Everybody wants to blame the beef. We're eating too much. But you have to create a whole new way of planting, eating,
thinking
your agriculture and thinking about it.
Well, that's the so that's why maybe, John, your talk on Monday is titled Earth Matters, the Science and Spirituality of Ethics in Action.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Well, listen, I used to go to parties in college, and if it wasn't at my house, I didn't clean up. But I was brought as a kid to clean up your mess. We're not real good at that as humans. We don't like to clean. Somebody else will clean it up. But if it's not affecting me, then it's somebody else's problem. This, you know, this whole conversation, what we're going to be talking about, this is actually April 15th. It's tax day. It starts at 6:30 at Northeastern. It's free. Is like Jaws. So they ignore the shark until it bites them in the you-know-what. The whole conversation that Richard Dreyfuss has, you're going to keep ignoring this particular problem until it swims up, and then when it does bite, we deny it. So you go down to Miami, where they're totally redoing their infrastructure because of this. It doesn't matter to somebody in Cleveland until it matters to somebody in Cleveland. So that's really what the talk's all about.
Yeah. Let's pause for just a minute. Yeah, if I said next Monday, it's the Monday after next.
15th of April, yes.
15th. And it's free. Admission is free to the public. A donation to the NEIU Green Conservation Group is suggested. Costs you $5 to park. It sounds like a good investment of $5 plus the donation and your time. John St. Augustine, Bill Curtis, last thoughts in a minute on WGN. Author and radio talk show host John St. Augustine and broadcast journalist Bill Curtis are going to be, not this coming Monday night, but Monday the 15th, that's tax day, giving a lecture. A
90-minute multimedia event, John.
At NEIU, which is at Foster and Pulaski. It's that college on the northwest side of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. Show up. It's at 6:30.
Yes, sir.
You know, we've been talking on and off the air about how you guys are trying to make people at least appreciate the significance of our actions.
Mm.
The president said he doesn't even believe in wind power and thinks it causes cancer, and he mocks it. I think that's... It's not Donald Trump per se, but it's that sort of mindset that's either not curious enough or too stubborn that we are all up against.
You feed this this attitude that, oh, well, there's another side. There really isn't another side. And they've taken the tobacco industry's defense. Yeah, they delayed all the action against tobacco and smoking. So now they find a scientist who will support their findings that, oh, well, you know, nothing's going to happen with climate change. Then they'll pour money into supporting it. And then they will market that and say, oh, look at that. It's very clear that they're fighting against it. So you're going to have a big disaster.
Years ago,
that's going to get our attention, and that disaster hasn't happened yet.
Well, it is. I mean, my God, you had three hurricanes in the course of a year that were supposed to be one every 1,000 years. If we just kind of wake up, it's very difficult to prove and link it directly to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Although the temperature of the water suggests it went up 1 degree, and hotter water increases the hurricanes.
Goes back to what I said before. In fifth grade, we had a terrarium. If you don't take care of the terrarium, everything inside the terrarium dies eventually. It's not that hard to figure out, but it is hard to combat that stuff because it is pounded quite frequently. And I think of Voltaire, who said, you know, men argue, nature acts. We are inconsequential species on this planet, but we're creating consequences because of that, of our ignorance. And so doing the show on the 15th, you know, I've thought about it many times. What do we want people to walk away with? To not be apathetic and to put away the denial gene, which is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. If there's an issue that's bothering you, when you engage in the issue, it bothers you less because you're actually part of the solution. So if it's as simple as picking up garbage on the street, if it's as simple as doing something in your neighborhood to clean things up, adopting a highway, engage in the process. Don't just be a victim of it, because otherwise you become apathetic and you sit around and listen to this stuff and say woulda, coulda, shoulda. And I don't think we were born for that.
And I'm going to plant some native grasses, Bill.
There you go.
I don't mean to be silly about this. I think we should all think about things large and small we can do. Okay, Monday. I'll mention this between now and then. You guys got a couple weeks before it. But and the website, I think, is on the bottom of this sheet here, too, right?
Northeast Illinois University. It's 5500 North St. Louis in Chicago. Foster and Pulaski. I just like saying Foster. Foster and Pulaski.
All right, get out of here, John.
Thanks,
nice
John.
To see you, Mr.
Thank
Curtis.
You, John.
That'd be John and Mr. Curtis. Did you notice
what I did catch that?
Here on WGN Radio.
Why do we even talk?
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Can I?
Here's John Williams.
Borrow some big thoughts from the last half hour and just play them here. Thank you, John St. Augustine and Bill Curtis. Wow.
Lord have mercy.
Predictably, lots of texts about the last half hour conversation, and I'll just read a few of them and then we'll move on. And a two, we're in the Allstate Skyline studio. This is John Williams. The Mincing Rascals judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago by the Headliners Club. Drops again at about 5 this afternoon. We recorded it just before the show. We'll put the finishing touches on it, and then you'll be able to hear The Mincing Rascals wherever you listen to finer podcasts.
I thought you were kind of rude to me today.
I did.
What did you call me?
I was. I said you were exasperating.
Exasperating, right. Well, I was.
You were belaboring some points that were just kind of surprised me. Belaboring is the wrong word. That's pejorative. You were saying some things that surprised me.
It's okay. I was exasperating. I understand.
The Mincing Rascals. But listen to it anyway. It'll post at about 5 o'clock this afternoon.
A lot of times people who are wrong find others exasperating. It makes perfect sense.
I'm going to go on now. It says here on the text line, a lot of you had opinions about the conversation that we had with Bill Curtis and John St. Augustine. They're giving a multimedia talk on Monday the 15th at NEIU on the city's northwest side. John, per Florida, what is surprising about a piece of land that was originally water being overtaken by water again? Water always wins the battle. Doesn't sound like a problem to me. So many of you, having heard these two guys talk about a talk they're going to give on the environment, ecology, nature, climate, and how we need to be better stewards of planet Earth. That's what Bill Curtis wants you to know. And doggone it, a lot of you just aren't having it. John, climate change equals more taxes. Why can't we accept that we humans will not last forever on this planet? Hey, John, what about using nuclear power? Illinois still gets more nuclear power. More of its energy comes from nuclear power than coal or any other source combined. We still, about 53% of our energy comes from nuclear power in Illinois still. And then it's coal. And then it's wind, and then it's water.
So that, read that text again about, well, we're not going to make it forever anyway?
Yeah.
Why
can't we accept that we humans will not last forever on the planet? Climate change equals more taxes.
I hope that guy's 98 years old.
You know, that's a good point. That's a good point. It worked out good for you, didn't it, fella? But what about your kids' grandkids?
I mean, think of that. We're presented with the problem. We're presented with possible solutions. And that texter says, yeah, it's happening, but who cares? I mean, we're not going to last forever.
All of this predicated on something that the president said in part. I'm going to play two presidential sound bites for you for a purpose. First, let's play the wind turbine thing. We're leaving the wind turbine topic. But here's just the way the president's mind works and how the crowd responds when he does.
Hillary wanted to put up wind. If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You tell me that one, okay? You know, the thing.
Okay, so that's President Trump. And everybody's laughing. And I think we're actually making too much out of what he said. He's a stand-up comic who happens to be president, and those people laugh, and some people like his jokes, some people don't. I don't believe that the president thinks that windmills cause cancer or wind turbines cause cancer. I really don't care what he thinks about it that much. Now, the other day he was giving a speech, and he was talking about the origins of the Mueller report, and he was it was one of those rambling talks of his. And he tried to use the word origins, and something happened. I'm going to play for you about 28 seconds of what happened when the president tried to use the word origins, referencing the Mueller report. This is that.
No collusion, no obstruction. I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the
investigation, the beginnings of that investigation. You look at the origin of the investigation, where it started, how it started. The Mueller report, I wish, covered the oranges, how it started, the beginnings of the investigation.
Okay, to me, that was pretty shocking. Not because I think Donald Trump is smart or dumb or I'm a Democrat and he's a Republican, just because I think I'm witnessing something. And that is somebody who knows the word and can define the word, and they can't say the word. We talked about this yesterday on the stream. Perhaps you weren't listening at WGNradio.com, but I think a lot of us stumble with words. I say Tivoli when I should say Tivoli. Somebody texted in the other day and they said that the word decision is a word that they always stumble over because once they said it in public, they got embarrassed because they mispronounced decision. And now they're very anxious about that word and it's a mental roadblock for them. So you can go a million directions on that, all the way to the Caribbean. Or do you say Caribbean? We all have words that we don't know how to say or some that we can't seem to recall, though we know how to say them. Now, maybe this was that, but that felt to me, particularly when you heard that audio, if you saw the video of it, you would see that the president had a bit of a troubled look on his face. It was almost like, what the hell's going on here? I can't say the word origin. When I do, it comes out oranges. It didn't come out apples, but you could see him struggling with a word that he clearly knows. So what was that? Now, Twitter fixed it for us. That's where I get all my medical information. And somebody said, my parents had strokes, and this is clearly a case of aphasia or frontal something or another, and that it's evidence that the president has a neurological issue, to say nothing with all the other issues. I don't know. We sent the audio of that just in case Dr. Sandra Weintraub hadn't seen it, a neuropsychologist at Northwestern Mejlin Center for Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's Disease. We asked her to listen to it and just talk to us about this phenomenon of some of us suddenly going, oh, wow, that's weird. What's that? She joins us now on WGN. Dr. Weintraub, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. I'm very well.
That's a long introduction, but in general now, that's my premise here. What do you want me to hear first and foremost?
Well, I want you to hear that you can make errors when you're talking. All of us can and do. They're called slips of the tongue, and they can be made for a variety of reasons. You're tired, you had too much to drink, your mind is racing ahead of you, you're nervous, you didn't sleep well the night before. All of those things can cause you to occasionally mess up on a word. However, if you mess up on a word more than once, or it's happening several times a minute, or you're really having a lot of trouble getting words out, that could be a signal of something much more serious in the brain.
Do you think you heard anything upon which you could offer a more specific opinion from the president just now?
Not really. If I'm going to be really fair, I have to say that until I hear more of that kind of error, I wouldn't get all that excited about it. But as I said, I guess it was a Twitter you say that you got from someone saying that it could be a sign of a stroke. Sure, it could. But that wouldn't happen just once. You'd have trouble with just about every word that came out of your mouth. There are also neurodegenerative diseases of the brain, like Alzheimer's, that start a lot more slowly than a stroke. But then, too, you wouldn't just have one occasion and no others. I'm sure you know that former President Reagan had Alzheimer's disease. And I think if you go back and look at some of his speeches towards the later part of his tenure, you'll see a lot of groping for words and a lot of wrong words. And that was a lot more concerning.
I thought it was peculiar, too, that it was this very specific word, origin equals orange. The other words seem to be flowing just fine. And I thought, well, maybe that's indicative of something, too. Is there anything to that?
Well, I'm not sure what you're picking up on the oranges and the origins. Is there, do you think, because of the topic that he was talking about, the origins?
I'm wondering if, I mean, because it's so unusual that it's so specific. Like, I could see, I do this for a living, fumble for words in front of people, but it's seldom a single word. You know, we all go, oh, who is the guy?
Or a whole word. You could, slur, but not...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, so it could have been any word. It happened to be oranges and origins. It could have been any other word that he said that he could have mixed up the sounds in the word.
Yeah, so that wasn't telltale. That wasn't a red flag specifically to you that all the other words worked, but suddenly, see, in my mind, I thought, okay, here's what's happened. Somewhere in his brain where the word orange has been stored or origin has been stored, something broke. And now he can't say that word, and this is evidence of that. You're telling me I'm not onto anything there, am I?
Well, you know, I would believe you if we had him say those words again and he continued to make the same mistake. It's very unusual,
yeah,
even in a stroke, that it's the same word that you can't pronounce every time.
That's interesting,
it's typically,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, then I guess if I'm the president or anybody else who relates to this, because to some degree we all do, what you're saying is encouraging, Doctor.
It's encouraging. I think that when people get older, and we know that President Trump is in that danger zone of an age where you worry about things like cognitive decline, it would be great to make sure that our presidential leaders are of full mind when they're working, but only because of his age at this point.
So can I, one more thing, it seemed like he knew he was using the wrong word, and yet he couldn't help himself.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, right? So I mean, actually, that might be a good sign, because he was aware of the fact that he made a mistake.
Yeah, but if
he caught himself.
But you got the feeling that if you came up to him and said, okay, stop, say the word, and you hold up an orange, say this thing, he couldn't do it. Now, that would scare the hell out of me if that happened to me.
I would be really surprised. I'm actually, one of my areas of expertise is aphasia. I am an expert clinician in this. And if that happened, we would have to write it up in a scientific journal.
That something that specific happened. That's,
yes.
Okay, so in other words, if I may, you're also telling me then that where he stumbled on that one word and then got anxious about it, he was just as likely to stumble on the word Mueller. He might have just as easily,
yeah,
stumbled on that word.
Absolutely. And you know, there is, now we're going to get really esoteric. There is a condition which is called semantic primary progressive aphasia, where there is brain degeneration and single words get lost from your vocabulary. So you might say to somebody, show them a picture of a pumpkin, and they can't tell you what it is. And it's always pumpkin that they can't tell you.
Well, that's what I thought I was seeing, but that would be rather extraordinary. That would be extraordinarily weird.
Rare and weird and not very common.
Didn't Oliver Sacks write about something like that at some point along the way? I'm sure he did. And then, you know, I have another sort of general question then for all of us. As we age, and by that I mean, you know, 30 plus, say.
You're in the right category.
So give me some advice or thoughts on our ability, our ability to talk good. Talk to me just briefly about how much is normal and how much is not normal, your sort of grasp of language and, you know, your attentiveness and your precision when you communicate, those sorts of things. And I think that would help us, too, in a minute on WGN. The president the other day stumbled on a word. He was trying to say origins, and four times, maybe three and a half times in a row, he said orange and oranges. And we were just wondering if there was something to that. We reached out to a neuropsychologist at Northwestern, Dr. Sandra Weintraub. She's a specialist in cognitive neurology and Alzheimer's disease, aphasia, too. And we've got some interesting questions, comments, and observations about that. Doctor, just in general, would you give us some guidance on sort of a mental or verbal decline as we age?
Yes. Aging causes changes in the brain that cause gradual changes in our thinking abilities, not just verbal abilities, but really all of our abilities, including the ability to remember scenes or what happened yesterday. And it turns out that the age-related changes first start to kick in around your 40s. And that's when people become aware of the fact that they're not as sharp as they were when they were 20 and they have to write things down. And, of course, you're fighting the, you know, in your 40s, you're sort of at the height of your productivity, so you have a lot more to do. So there's, like, this declining cognitive ability and increasing responsibilities, and they sort of crisscross. But of course, in your 40s, it's just annoying. However, by the time you get to your 60s, we start seeing people diverge, and some people will experience much more serious decline, and we think those people have some form of a dementia or something caused by Alzheimer's disease or other form of neurodegenerative disease. I heard you mention frontotemporal dementia.
Yeah.
It's another kind of disease that causes cognitive decline. So it's nothing to worry about if something happens once in a while, but if there's a pattern that starts to emerge, and especially if other people are noticing these changes and you aren't, that's most concerning.
Some of us then develop skills. So I'm going to be 60 soon, and when I'm talking to people or going about my day, I'll write something down that maybe in the past I would have assigned to memory, short-term mm-hmm. or near-term, and now I find myself writing them down. I guess that's just a normal coping mechanism, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's definitely would fall in the normal aging trajectory.
Somebody texted a moment ago and said, well, okay, if we're just talking about the president's mental health, and by the way, another Chicago researcher is one of 36 in a mammoth book that just came out that is about one subject, that this president's mental health. It's really interesting. But one of our callers and texters said, okay, what about the president three times now in a row saying that his father was born in Germany, when in fact he knows and we know that his father was not? I don't know that I would assign that to your area of research. Do you have anything to say about that?
You're absolutely correct. That comes into the realm of character disorders. And I do know something about them, but it's definitely not my area of specialty.
I won't trouble you with it then. I'll trouble you with this other stuff another day, though. This has been very helpful, Doctor. I appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you so much.
Dr. Sandra Weintraub is a neuropsychologist at Northwestern's Mechelen, is it kind of a soft S, Mechelen Center for Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's. Yeah, I guess they could have played today.
Sure.
Well, I mean, they have. They've played in worse. But if you had your druthers, that's why you have that buffer day, then just wait till tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I don't really understand whose advantage it is to postpone it, right? Because they've sold the tickets anyway.
That's an interesting point.
So you would think fewer people who were going to go today will go tomorrow because they had to make arrangements, but they probably will sell more concessions maybe tomorrow.
I bet, that's a good question. Because, opening day is a special day. Everybody expects crappy weather. You get it, you go.
Right.
You endure. And the teams will play, blah, blah, blah. I think they literally thought they would not be able to get the game in. But then you would just postpone it and move it to the next day anyway.
I think this seems like, and I might be wrong here, but the Sox are willing to postpone on forecast more than... No, I mean it. I think that's true.
Really? Where did you get that?
Just being here for 30 years and watching the Cubs
You've
or watching the Sox.
Attention. I haven't paid enough attention to the Sox over the years to have an informed opinion on that.
Whenever there's a postponement, I feel like the Sox are more likely to do it on the forecast than the Cubs. I don't know if that's typical of baseball or not typical.
What are you saying? That
saying
the Cubs
anything.
Are tougher?
No.
Or that they're what? What is your point, man?
I take exception to that.
What's that all about?
Who is that?
Pam.
I know,
Pam
I'm teasing
Kim.
You.
Kim. It was Kim.
Well, you could argue that the Sox are better to their fans, so they cancel and don't make them sit through bad weather. I don't know.
Yeah. Cubs just play the games and make the fans sit through bad games. Sorry. I know. A lot of you love the Cubs, and we all love the Cubs. But, boy, Kevin's not sitting over there. Don't you think that the Cubs Okay, let me ask this way. Do you think that there are any true red flags in the first week of play for the Cubs? Right? Is this indicative of anything? Or is it just three bad outings?
We're five games in, right?
Whatever.
Four games in?
I think the Cubs are, what are the Cubs, 1-3 or 1-4? They're 1-something. They're 1-whatever.
They're 1-4. They'd lost two in Texas, and they've lost two in Atlanta, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So what?
So they're winning 20% of their games. And what if the games early in the season don't matter anyway? How did last season go?
That's right. They don't even count. What they do is they take the games starting in June, and those are the only ones that they apply to the playoffs.
You wait till you blow the games at the end of the season.
Those are the ones that matter. Those are the ones you really need to pay attention to. Did you in the news also do a story about was it a politician who said that if the vote is tied?
I was just doing that. In Princeton, it's a city council election. And it's the incumbent and challenger, they each have 771 votes. And the county clerk says, well, we know we've mailed out five absentee ballots that are unaccounted for. So they've got like probably 10 days left to come in that could decide it. And the challenger said if it ends up in a tie, there would be a flip of the coin. But she said, well, if it's a tie, I'd rather the incumbent took the job.
I like the idea of coming up with something other than the flip of a coin. Let's at least come up with a theory and stick to it. Now, maybe you would say it's incumbent upon the incumbent to win. They have that advantage. And if it's a tie, somebody else got as many votes as you, and that's a vote of disapproval. You should go out. But pick one of those theories.
Well, but some races aren't among incumbents, like the Chicago mayor's race wasn't.
Okay, we don't have that option here. But in the case where we do, if it's an even vote, maybe we should, because really a flip of a coin is the worst way to decide.
It is not a good way to do it, right?
That's dumb.
We should play bags or something.
But and a revote is a bad idea because it's not that, you know, fewer people will participate, and we're bad at elections as it is.
So you should have like a Jeopardy for your hometown, a Jeopardy contest, Princeton for 200. And then whoever wins that clearly knows the town and the issues better than the other one.
I like that.
And so then they go on.
Then we get them there, and they have the little buzzer, and they say, this founding father of
Illinois.
Of Princeton, Illinois, or Chicago. Right. The Chicago River used to flow in which direction? Lori, for 200. It used to flow towards the lake. Okay. And then Chicago means what in Native American language? Chicago is named after what? Steve Bertrand, go.
No, I'm Tony Preckwinkle.
Oh, okay. So, I'm sorry, Tony Preckwinkle, go.
What is wild onion?
Yes, I think, or stinky onion, yes.
Stinky onion?
Yes. Pam, Steve has now 400 points, or $400.
Speaking of stinky, Pam was giving me the stink eye earlier today.
She was giving you a little bit of stink eye.
It's so not true.
I just said hello, I think, and boom.
That is not true. I don't think you need to be scared of me. It's the reverse.
708 says, hey, Steve, the Cubs have lost four in a row.
Four in a row?
So of their five games. So, you know, what about that?
They're
what
due.
About that? They're... What are we going to do?
Taking L-35.
We were talking about the president's gaffe the other day when he said orange when he meant orange origin. And some of you have commented that this is us picking on the president the way we are wont to do. I don't think I do that much on this show. The program after this one does maybe more than I do, but I don't think I pick on the president that much.
I think it was, I've never heard anything like that before, the orange thing.
My son texted me and he said, I'm a little surprised that you're really going off on this. And I said, yeah, this is a weird one, but I'm only doing so because I think it's a legitimate concern that I would have had were I the president.
But now you've heard from an expert that it's not necessarily.
I hope that was helpful. If some of us have those panic-struck moments, and the president's in his 70s, maybe you're in your 60s, your 80s, and you go, oh, crap, it's happening. It may be. But she was here to tell us that what we heard from the president was not pure evidence of that. I think that was just good in every possible way.
Orange, you glad I didn't say banana?
Oh, come on.
See, that's what it should have got at the Mincing Rascals. You guys just moaned.
He wound up that joke. We're talking about this in the Mincing Rascals podcast. In the middle of it, Steve goes, knock, knock. And we all look at him like, oh, my God, Steve's the one losing his mind. So I go, who's there? And he says, Banana. And I go, oh, Lord, really? So we walk all the way through that dumb joke.
Not all the way through. I cut corners. That's when I realized you were mad at me.
Colleen wanted to say something. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Colleen.
Hey, Don. My theory is this. Maybe it's the first time Trump attempted a word like origin, being that it's a little more higher cerebral thinking that he's never used before. So clearly being told to just use that word in that moment and not having a familiarity with it, it tripped him up.
See, this is exactly the kind of cheap shot I'm trying not to take.
But for, if you truly listen to how he speaks, it's very juvenile. It's very fundamental. And even though he may be trying to express higher level thought, his vocabulary is very limited. It's shocking, actually, the limits that he has of words available to him in a moment of thought.
Yeah,
Well,
I'm a student of his speech. We all are. I'll say this about it, and I don't know how conscious he is of what he's doing, but he doesn't go for he doesn't talk the way Barack Obama does, right? Fancy words and nuanced thoughts. He hammers home big fat points with humor and exaggeration. That works for him. So
he does it bigly.
the word bigly comes from Donald Trump. He's just bam, bam, bam. That's his M.O.
But I didn't know that he's hammering it home because it sounds so sophomoric. I feel like people who are even listening are like, come on, you can dig a little bit deeper or have a little more even knowledge of what you're talking about. Because he uses the same word repetitively, indicating that there's no further thought involved or there's no deeper thought. That's what shocked me the most, I think.
I'm seriously interested. I'm seriously curious about why he keeps saying his father was born in Germany.
Yeah.
And that's a different animal entirely. But I just, it's one of those things where you see there's no real payoff to it. Everybody knows it's not true.
Sure.
It would be like if I said I had two heads. You don't.
Right.
What's the point of that? I don't understand it.
Because it gets the laugh track. It gets the clap track. And I think that's what he's after constantly is that reaction.
Well, that's why I think when he was doing the windmill thing, going windmills cause cancer, the mainstream media is reporting that like, oh my God, the president thinks windmills cause cancer. If you listen to it, it's one of three funny things he said, and everybody was laughing, and he was completely riffing. So I'm giving him a pass on, I think the people that need to just settle down are people like me, who listen to or hear about Donald Trump saying that windmills cause cancer. That's not what he meant. I don't think that's what he meant at all.
But I hope the laughter then was in the sort of collective ridiculousness of that, the collective recognition that it was so outrageous, we're uncomfortable, because we believe it.
That's the danger of this, isn't it, right? So if everybody's laughing, you need to look to the left and right and go, this is funny, right? We're being funny, right? All right, Colleen, thank you for the call.
Thanks. All right, thanks, Don. Take care. Okay.
So one of our listeners named Colleen. 630 says, John, Trump did not say wind power causes cancer. He said some say it causes cancer. John, how did we...
Yeah, but that's the danger of it. That's what happens. That's the conspiracy theory when you don't... And he does do that a lot, where he doesn't take ownership of it, but he also puts it out in the public dialogue like it's true. That is not a good thing.
Elif, will you grab the Trump windmill thing again? And they're not windmills. They're wind turbines. But I... Just play the soundbite, Elif.
Hillary wanted to put up wind. If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You tell me that one, okay? The thing makes sense. So, and of course, it's like a graveyard for birds. If you love birds, you'd never want to walk under a windmill because it's...
Yeah, okay.
I didn't hear that, but that's like a George Carlin. He sounds like, and it's a graveyard for birds.
Well, so do you think anybody's walking out of there going, oh my God, George, assuming the person was talking to someone named George? Oh, my God, George, windmills cause cancer. What are we going to do? Uncle Fred lives on a farm outside of Kankakee. I don't think that happened as a result of that speech.
I think when you say, they say, or a lot of people say, it's and it's not based on truth, a lot of times if it's based on, if the they is a conspiracy theory, that only furthers it. If you hear the President of the United States say...
I'm not saying this is healthy or helpful.
No, but...
But I'm saying that let's just all get a grip on this. It would be more troublesome to me if the President indicated that he really does think what he said was true. He didn't do that for me.
Well, I hate getting into these, falling down this chute with you, but imagine George W. Bush or any other president saying, you know, they say wind turbines give you cancer. That would be felt. The Wind Turbine Alliance would respond. The country would respond. There'd be some sort of debate. You know, presidents aren't supposed to say, they say. But this one does and gets away with it.
815 just texted, how many times did Bush make up words again? A lot. Mayor Daley was a champion of malaprops, was he not? Didn't Mayor Dwight not remember correctly?
It's all about jobs. J-O-S-B, jobs.
All right, it's 2:49. I have exciting news. We're changing topics after this. Ed, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. I read several months ago that, this is by a Republican strategist, that the people that don't like Trump take everything he says very literally against him. And the people that are his strongest supporters are the opposite. They know he's talking figuratively, and it's braggadocio.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between the people that, you know, they go nuts when he says these malaprisms, as you says, or says turbines when he means turbines, things like that. But so that's the difference between the two. And I think it's an interesting way to look at it. You know, different perspectives.
Yeah, really. I guess if you didn't know if somebody was a fan of Trump, play that thing where he talks about wind power, and the person that's laughing and the person that's not laughing, you'll know which side of the debate they're on. Thanks for the call, Ed. I'll go from you to one last call. James, you're on the air. Hi, James. You're on WGN.
Yeah, I'm going to be very quick because I know you're till the end, but I was just kind of go over what that guy was saying, but go a little bit further, is that this is a classic example of people hear what they want to hear, see what they want to see, believe what they want to believe. Now, when I listened to that the two or three times that you played it, I did not get the impression that it was being serious. It was all tongue in cheek. Listen to the inflection. You got to listen to the inflection, not so much as the words. That's what I have to say, John.
Thanks for the phone call, and I completely agree with you. Listen, I'm no fan of the president's. If you've listened to this show much, you know that, but I don't think we needed to take what he said about wind energy seriously. He was being funny. He shouldn't maybe be that way, but I don't think you know anything about his attitude about the science of wind power and cancer. He was just riffing, and good grief, he found an audience of people that thought it was hilarious. The news click was going to be, is it too soon for Cubs fans to start worrying? Maybe if they lose another game or two, I'm not wishing that on them, we'll make it that. Kevin, what would the right answer to that be?
Well, it's the way they're losing, John. The bullpen is what the biggest weakness we thought would be going into the season, and that's exactly what's occurred here. 35 walks over five games for the Cubs. Not good, John. You should be a little bit worried.
35 walks?
Mm-hmm.
Five games?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, 35, and then you do that thing. 35 walks over five games?
Mm-hmm.
I know you've said that, but wow. So that's seven walks a game,
mm-hmm.
by my math. Hokey smokes.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like they're going to do anything to address it outside of this system, according to Cubs execs, meaning players figure it out.
Okay, but well, that's it. But maybe that's it, right? So they'll figure it out. They're not going to give up seven walks a game. These guys, it's good grief. For a lot of them, it's their first outing, and they'll get better, right, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so.
Right, Kevin?
Yes, right, John. Kevin? The Cubs will be just fine, I think. Maybe not.
Yeah,
it's too early to completely lose your mind, but you should have some concern for the bullpen for sure.
Well, you'd rather be 4-1 than 1-4. I see Anna DeVlantis and Ro Connor in Studio D, and Ro's now putting his headphones on, taking one last sip of water.
Yes, I am.
I believe that was water.
It's actually Vitamin Water Zero Shine.
Do you drink vitamin water?
I do. I'm a big 50 Cent fan.
Does it make you feel more motivated or energetic, energized?
No. It's easier because it's water that tastes like something, and mm-hmm. it's got no calories in it, and so I'm like it.
You're on it.
I'm on it.
It's like what doesn't hurt to maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but it's not hurting.
I drink more water when it tastes like something. then if it doesn't taste like anything, I tend to choke on water.
What does it taste like, this product?
It's grapey. Isn't that one grapey?
No. This is, it tastes like sunshine. It says it's strawberry lemonade. It's really good.
It tastes like sunshine.
Yeah.
Well, you need a little of that today, so I pass some of that over here.
But it does. John, how excited are we about the White Sox opener tomorrow, Cork and Carry? Right? This, I'm telling you, it's going to be fun. No?
I'm standing right here. I was just wondering where you were going with that. Was that you being sarcastic or was that you being sincere?
I'm being sincere.
Try it again.
How do you feel about this White Sox opener tomorrow?
Oh, I'm really excited about it, Ro.
Something to be excited about is that they're not sitting out in it right now.
Yeah.
Right? It's a great call.
Actually, I am. We had a blast last year.
We did.
That place was packed, and I'm glad that we're not out there today. So it's a win-win. Hopefully, it'll be a win-win-win.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That was a sincere thing.
Keep drinking that juice.
Is it that
I
don't read as sincere? I don't know what's going on there. I don't understand why. Anyway, it'll be a lot of fun tomorrow. It's like an all-day adventure with the White Sox.
It's tremendous.
So
it's going to be fun.
They're fun.